How do, everybody? This is Cheryl Canning. Yes. And I'm here to talk about my favorite subject. But that'll have to wait. Here comes the Colonel. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, everybody thinks it's funny. It's not funny. I mean, I don't know why people think it's funny. You probably know, if you've listened to this program regularly, that our studios are located in the same building where down the hall is the audition studios for Comedy Central here in Dallas. And these people like to sneak in here between our shows and disrupt the place. It's not funny, Carol Channing. All right, on with our program. Back to the second half, The Promise of Tomorrow, here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason, and we explore the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, cyber warfare, all sorts of different things. In just a minute, we're going to get back to our interview with John Adams. He's the author of Cyber Blackout, When the Lights Go Out, Nation at Risk. He's a fascinating subject, and we wanted to especially talk to him because of the show, the conference going on in the Arlington Convention Center on October 22nd that is produced by IEEE, the Engineers Association, Electrical Engineers Association, and, of course, Lockheed Martin and Encore. And you can find out more information about Metricon at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see an icon. And just click on the link, and that will take you to the Metricon website. That's October 22nd in Arlington. That's between Dallas and Fort Worth. This is the 28th straight year. And one of the highlights of that conference is developing and deploying secure systems, or cybersecurity. Anyway, John Adams has plenty to say. When we left him at the last half hour, we were talking about Tres Amigas. And I know that you probably have paid attention sometimes to the program here, if you're a regular listener. That's where the Eastern Electrical Grid and the Western Grid and the Texas Grid, there's only three, come together at one spot in Clovis, New Mexico. And they're doing construction right at the moment. And if all three grids come together, the purpose is so that each electrical grid doesn't have to hold back its electrical supply. Like 20% of the electricity that is generated in Texas is held in reserve and is often just wasted because we don't use it. But it's there in case we do have an emergency. And the Eastern Grid and the Western Grid all do the same thing. So if it all comes together in one spot, the grids can share the reserve. And I think that's probably the biggest reason that they want to do it. But I'm worried about vulnerability. And so we asked John Adams about that in the previous half hour. And he has some interesting things to say. We're going to follow through with that here in just a little bit. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. And right now, though, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set to answer today's query. We're going to rummage around the coin jar just a minute here because we got to pay the fountain, you know. Uh-huh. And then see if he can figure out the answer to today's query.
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help?
Yes, of course. As expected, because we threw in the coins, we have awakened the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right. Oh, spirit of the, the fountain, here's one that's going to throw you. In which South American desert is the driest place in the world? The driest place in the world. In which South American desert is it?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell me.
Aha, the spirit of the fountain knows. You thought it was Dallas, Texas in July, didn't you? Well, no. In which South American desert is the driest place in the world? The South American desert, the driest place in the world, is the Atacama Desert. A-T-A-C-A-M-A Desert. All right. Back to our program.
Thank you.
Okay, the great music of the Science News Studio Band, right here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason. It's going to take us back now to our interview with John Adams, the author of Cyber Blackout, When the Lights Go Out, Nation at Risk. We talked very extensively with John in the first half hour, and we touched on a subject that was very important to me. Those of you who have listened to this program regularly know that we've covered the events going on at Tres Amigas. That's a project in Clovis, New Mexico, Tres Amigas standing for the Three Sisters. And it is to bring together the electrical grid of Texas, the eastern grid, and the western grid at one spot in Clovis, New Mexico. And we've had some interesting conversations with Dave Stidham, who's the chief engineer there. He's going to be speaking about Tres Amigas October 22nd at the Arlington Convention Center with MetroCon, which is produced by IEEE and sponsored, of course, by Lockheed Martin and Encore and some others. So we're going to have a chance to ask him a whole lot of questions. But my concern when I was speaking with John Adams is the security involved in bringing all the electrical grids together at one place, because John Adams is very concerned about cyber blackout and the vulnerabilities of our electrical system. So I asked him about it, and we delved into it pretty deeply. So here's the rest of the interview with John Adams, author of When the Lights Go Out, Cyber Blackout, Nation at Risk.
They better be putting in clear controls and checks and security to keep someone from coming into one pod. They do it for some justification for efficiency or some type of savings, you know, which I think is good. Those are all good, noble items. But in this world, with this particular threat, you know, is the savings really worth what the potential threat could be when you could decentralize to a point and be able to protect your systems better? So, you know, so the answer is I don't know. I know I'm aware of those activities. Again, I'm very sure that there are a lot of great folks trying to figure out how to do this to protect it, but it still begs the question of putting all your eggs in one basket in one location. I don't care whether it's in Cushman, Oklahoma, where all the oil lines come together. I don't care whether it's with the power grid. I don't care what it is, whether it's the cloud. You are susceptible if you have not taken extraordinary measures to protect yourself. Extraordinary. That's the key. Not just the minimal. And that's what we've done up to now. The banking industry has only done the minimal, basically. And all of a sudden, they too have in-house, a lot of in-house folks that are trying to make sure that they hack their own systems and they check and all that other stuff. And the minimal got away, you could get away with that for a while. But again, like I indicated, the hackers and those people out there are running faster and only have to be right one time to get into your system.
Yeah, absolutely. In the case of Tres Amigas, I've done a little research on that on my own. It's going to come together at Clovis, New Mexico, but the command center is going to be in Albuquerque, and they've got a backup. There's going to be one major command center, but there's going to be a second, a redundant backup, also in Albuquerque. But the transmission from the communications between Clovis and Albuquerque is going to consist of existing fiber optic lines that they're going to rent from whoever owns them. I forget who it is at this time who owns them. And also, where there are no fiber optic lines, they're going to be using microwave video transmission. So, to me, that is incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah, and I don't know all the details, but that sure does sound like a lot of opportunities to be compromised. So, I don't know the specifics on how they're doing their centers and everything. All I'm saying is again, if you concentrate everything in one spot and you really have not done everything you can to harden it, you are going to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what their systems are or what they're doing.
How about giving us a peek into the future, maybe 5 or 10 years down the line? Obviously, you believe that these problems will be fixed, or certainly can be fixed, yes, but will they be fixed? And what do you see? You know, we're looking at talking about computer singularity by 2045. You know, what does that bode for us?
Yeah. Well, obviously, you know, this it is moving. The speed of this is beyond, if you'd have told us 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, we would have this speed and this capability, everybody would have just kind of, you know, yawned and said, sure, we knew it'd be better, but not at this. And of course, it's the research and the quantum leaps are great. I think you get back to some basic blocking and tackling things. Number one, there's got to be an internal checks and balances on employees and people that enter it, and training and understanding about not opening up emails and this phishing where I could send an email to you about, you and I like airplanes, so I send you an airplane email about a new airplane. Well, you know, I'd open it up immediately. You'd open it up immediately. Well, that's there you go. I just penetrated your system. Mm-hmm. So there's that level. And the second thing would be encryption. Encryption now is more expensive. I think the price is on the way to come down. I think before, you say 5 years, and 3 to 5 years, it's going to be required that just about everything is going to be encrypted. And again, that's a next big jump for security, but there are folks out there right now working to beat you know, any encryption systems that we could come up with. And the third thing is what we've just talked about is care and assessment about concentration of where your data is and you know, what you're doing to protect that, and with an awareness that there is people trying to penetrate it. So clearly it's education on internal people. It's encryption, and it's a wide-eyed look at just exactly what the threats are. I think there's, you know, we do not want an incident to happen, but I just think folks just really don't realize, you know, just how disruptive. Look at Estonia. I talk about that. That's an old story, but you know, they went in. They got a very wired country. They're a small country, about the size of probably South Carolina, and a few millions of people, and they shut down the country for just about 6 or 8 weeks because everything was electronic. Banking, paid your bills, you paid for your groceries, the water systems, everything, and the fight over a statue in downtown of their capital with the Russians, they dove into their systems and just shut the country down.
Wow.
Shut it down. I mean, we're talking everything, and so, you know, we've got examples.
I think Russia do something similar with the Ukraine not too long ago when they got?
Oh yeah, no, they do it selectively different places where they go in and really, you know, jump in with their hackers and to go in there to flood the area and try to compromise the computers. And that's just it. We're home computing, you know. So when a kid can break into, you know, CENTCOM in Tampa, they said, well, it was their what, Twitter account or something. I don't care what it is. You know, they broke into Central Command in Tampa.
Yeah.
What does it take the light bulb to come on? Sony got a lot of publicity, but you know, that should be a wake up call. And Sony lost, and it was on 60 Minutes this weekend. It was a fabulous program. You didn't see it?
No.
Your listeners need to pull up the 60 Minutes program on hacking that was on this weekend. It was a knockout, and it walks through the very things we're talking about today. I do think there are a lot of efforts being made to address this, but it cannot be put on the back burner, and it's got to be addressed and continually. And we are in a cyber wired world. We know this. I mean, that's kind of a glib comment to even make. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it, I realized I was in a store, you're getting ready to use my card, and the guy says, well, no, wait a minute. You have a new chip in there. We have to put this in there this way with the chip.
Oh, boy.
And I'm going, you know, yeah, that's how I got the new card with the chip in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, how long is it going to take for them to leapfrog to get the chip in my new credit card?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So there is an encryption type item where you put that new little chip in the card. But when he said no, you don't swipe that one. We have to stick it in so we can read the chip. And I'm thinking, I wonder whether there's somebody right now trying to figure out how to break into
it. Oh, sure.
You know,
absolutely.
So it helps.
Yeah, very much.
Other than that, no. I just think the awareness from the top down is so critical, and it's not. It's not pushed down the hallway to IT. They're great. The IT folks do what they do. Mm-hmm. But when the lights go out, this is going to be a command and control, whether it's by the city manager or county judge or the president of companies or our regional folks. And our first responders are fabulous for whatever incident we have. But this is a whole nother level of threat that is that's not fully being, you know, it's being addressed. But it's not just the awareness level needs to continually be there in the future. Sun Tzu, 500 BC, my dear friend, he said, all warfare is based on deception. So keep in mind that there are people trying to use deception to penetrate everything we do in our daily lives. And they clearly don't have our best interest in heart, whether it's for monetary gain, to get in our accounts or whatever.
All right. We've been talking with the author of Cyber Blackout, When the Lights Go Out, Nation at Risk, John Adams. Fascinating guest. Really appreciate your hard work. And I'm so glad that you're about the doing of it. And we hope we can have you back from time to time, because we certainly consider you an authority on this subject. And I know that it's going to continue to come up on this program over and over. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good to talk with you. Have a good day.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
This is going to change our world. If you think about what the internet did, natural gas is going to do the same thing for the United States. And the big thing it's going to do is, when you buy a dollar's worth of gasoline, a lot of that dollar leaves our country and never comes back. So if you spend a dollar on compressed natural gas, all the equipment's made here, first of all, and all the fuel comes from here. So most of that dollar is going to stay in your local economy, and all of it will stay at least in our national economy. So it's better than printing money. We're revolving money. We're spending money with our neighbors. My name is Tom Sewell. It's S-E-W-E-L-L. I'm the president of Tulsa Gas Technologies.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.